I'd like to introduce David Campbell, who is going to be telling us a bit about PAC inhibitors. David's down the street from Afraxys. At Afraxys, he's had a long history of involvement in biotech, and he's done some very groundbreaking work. And I think you'll hear some very exciting work on the role of PAC in cancer.
Okay, so I'm going to get started today. Just a little bit of background on the company. We're a biotech founded in 2007, primarily focusing on the identification of PAC inhibitors. I just want to show you on the right-hand side the team, and we're not going to go through great detail, but that is the team, these four people. Everything else is outsourced, and that's part of the challenge that you're going to hear about today, and part of the reason why our key scientific advisors that we work with are critical. You're going to hear today, I'm going to talk about work that we're doing with Dr. Chernoff and Dr. Kissel in neurofibromatosis in particular. Dr. Suresh alluded to some of the work with PAC and glioblastoma. That's not a focus of my talk today, but it's these key interactions that are allowing us to drive our programs forward. Now, PAC itself consists of a family of six different kinases broken into two different groups, and we're focusing on the group 1 PACs. And I just pulled on the left-hand side an adaptation from a summary that came out a few years ago. And you look at that and you say, gosh, PAC is a critical regulator of a number of key oncogenic processes, has to be a good target, and you get really excited about it, but it's that provides all the complexity. Depending upon the cancer type, the cancer cells, the biology that's dysregulated, different parts of these pathways are relevant, and if you're always following the MAP kinase or you're always following NF-kappa-B, you're going to miss part of the story, and that's part of the challenge that we're facing in translating from cutting-edge research that's being published by academic groups, typically with genetic means, knockdowns, knock-ins, to coming up with a drug discovery development path moving forward. So what I'm going to focus on today is a subset of cancers where the dysregulation actually occurs between a tumor suppressor, which is called NF2 or Merlin, neurofibromatosis, and its interactions with PAC and vice versa. So it turns out that usually NF2 works to suppress PAC activity. Loss of NF2, either in a genetic orphan disease that I'm going to talk about, leads to an upregulation of PAC activity. You also see loss of NF2 in glioblastoma progression, to glioblastoma in breast cancer progression, as well as there was some very nice work that came out looking at amplification now of the 11q13 amplicon that contains the PAC1 gene in a subset of a number of different cancer types. And it's really this biology that is going to be the focus of my talk today that we're focusing on in developing a path forward. So the first off is a disease, neurofibromatosis type 2. It's characterized by benign tumors that grow on nerves. There are a number of different types. The bilateral vestibular schwannoma you can see growing here typically induces deafness, tinnitus, loss of balance, hearing, etc. And you can see in this one brainstem compression. There are also spinal schwannomas that form in these patients, as well as cranial meningiomas. And all of this arises from a loss of the NF2 protein or the NF2 gene in these patients. So it's a genetically defined orphan disease that has significant morbidity. These patients typically present with significant morbidity by the time they're about 20 and are dead on average by the time they're 36. Horrible disease progression. The only opportunity right now is surgical resection, and the tumors grow back. And given where these tumors are, you can see the demands of that. And sometimes just the tumor load itself, it's just not a viable path forward. So there was some very nice work that came out by Dr. Chernoff showing that NF2 mutations led to, or loss of NF2 in schwannoma cells led to aberrant cellular morphology that could be rescued when the PAC inhibitory domain was present, similar profile and invasion, and then importantly, mutant NF2 leading to an increase in this particular xenograft study that he did in tumor growth that could be reduced when the PAC inhibitory domain was co-expressed. So this is the sort of data set that you get when you come into a new area. There are no small molecules. So is this PAC inhibitory domain, what is the key driver? How important is the catalytic activity to this? You have a number of questions that are still remain unanswered. Another part of the process is, okay, now we're developing inhibitors. The age-old question in kinase world is, do we want a kinase inhibitor that only targets PAC? Because as an example in a publication, PAC actually has been shown now in colorectal cancer, NF2, a number of areas. It actually phosphorylates beta-catenin, leading to a complete manifestation of its activity and a stabilization of beta-catenin, for instance. Okay, so we could say we want an inhibitor that only inhibits PAC. Well, it was shown in the same paper that in addition to the PAC activity, SARC and PDGF upstream are playing a critical role. So do we want a multiple kinase inhibitor? And so it's not just the biology, it's what profile do you want your compounds to have? And so fortunately, our MedChem teams have been very productive. We're in a very enviable position where we have a series that targets some tyrosine kinases plus PAC, and then we have another series that just targets PAC with no off-target activities, and we're beginning to progress these through so that we can start asking questions and basing our decisions on efficacy and safety moving forward. What I want to show on this slide is working with Dr. Kissel now at the Vistar Institute, looking at 1A and 1B. This is just simply cell data, cell proliferation data, and an NF2-deficient schwannoma cell line. Our 1A series, you can see, are much more potent, have a very good impact on the cell line proliferation. These are much less active, but we're still starting to see about a 30% reduction in proliferation. We've taken some of these compounds or closely related analogs into animal models where we've shown activity in a NF2 orthotopic model. Part of our agreement with the academic collaborators that we typically work with is we have to respect confidentiality. When that data is published and is being written up, I can share it with you. But right now, this is the data I can share, and we have some positive data in our orthotopic model. Another thing that you have to keep in mind is as we move forward, this is a model for neurofibromatosis, but turns out that 100% of sporadic schwannomas also have this loss of the NF2 protein. So as we're thinking about our genetic orphan and our path forward, we're thinking about additional applications. Because in the end, we need to presumably partner this program. It's those additional applications that are going to entice activities. I'm not going to go into great detail here, but a typical clinical plan now looking at neurofibromatosis coming in here. We're going to do a standard 1A dose DLT determination, and then we're going to move in directly into NF2 patients, looking at about 10 to 12 patients. We're going to have annual MRIs with the majority of these patients coming into here, so we're going to have an inclusion criteria of greater than 25% annual growth rate. What that will allow us to do in a reasonable amount of time is to begin to assess impact on radiological imaging. I think both Avastin and Erlotinib and retrospective analyses that have been published by Scott Plotkin, you can see inside of 3 or 6 months, you start seeing this sort of impact. So we can start getting positive feedback on are we having a positive impact on the bilateral vestibular schwannoma in this patient population. And furthermore, we've spoken to a number of clinicians, and they agree with the path. Now, on the other side, moving beyond just this genetic orphan disease, I spoke about malignant mesothelioma. This is another disease where 50% of the patients that progress, of humans that progress to malignant mesothelioma, have actually lost the expression of NF2. So same sort of mechanism of action here. And we have a readily available H226 derived from mesothelioma patient that's NF2 deficient. And you can see in this case, both of our series, the highly selective series and the less selective series, are having a very comparable impact on proliferation. So what we're beginning to do now is move these compounds forward in this other genetically defined cancer indication. So you can see what we're really trying to do here is spending a lot of time, even though we're in research and development, spending a lot of time starting to put our non-clinical packages together, identifying patient subsets so that we can move into the clinic with a high probability of success. Slightly larger indication, non-small cell lung carcinoma. Genentech had a very nice publication, came out. Actually, they had two that came out last year. And basically what they started showing, they did some work with breast cancer that we've known about for a while, but they also showed our non-small cell lung carcinoma cell lines that overexpress the 11q13 amplicon. Proliferation can be inhibited when PAC is inhibited, both in a cellular context as well as in a dox-induced xenograft model. So very nice data. Once again, you're left with the question, is the catalytic domain important? Is it a binding complex important, et cetera, et cetera. So we're coming into here with our small molecules now. Fortunately for us, you can see the three cell lines that they've identified as high expressors of this particular amplicon. We've got very good activity with our lead 1A compound here against all three cell lines. The 1B, interestingly, you can see not quite as potent as you'd expect, just given the biochemical potency. But once again, we're having a positive activity with both a mixed kinase inhibitor as well as a highly specific group 1 PAC inhibitor. And it is consistent with the mechanism of action, and that PAC activity is dependent for survival. So what we're doing in a number of these different situations now is we're moving into, we need to understand the signaling pathways that we're interrogating. So there's a lot of Western blot work that's going on. It needs to be contracted out. We're evaluating, is a cell death that we're observing here, is it apoptosis? And we're also heading towards xenograft. So I've been talking about the biology side. I'm not going to spend much time on the other side, but in addition to all these, you know, the compounds need to be orally available, presumably once-a-day dosing, safe, and all of those have actually been certainly developed for the 1A series and are moving forward now, looking for the 1B in these different cancer settings. So what I've been focusing on, I've just got a couple slides left, has been the interplay between PAC and its suppressor NF2, and when that becomes dysregulated, either because PAC is upregulated or NF2 is lost, and the cancers and the proliferation that occurs because of that. What's also emerging now, and there's been a number of publications that have been coming out over just the last few months, is the important role that PAC is now playing. Primarily, they're looking at colorectal cancer, where it is playing a significant role in phosphorylating the beta-catenin. We know the GSK3 beta mutations and other APC mutations lead to an increase in beta-catenin. Well, it turns out that what was going on beyond that, the next step, partial step of this, is PAC phosphorylating at two different sites now, beta-catenin, stabilizing it, and also maximizing its transcriptional activity. And so we've begun evaluating, once again, cancers, and now we have a signaling pathway. We'll be looking at 675 and 663 on beta-catenin, seeing if we're able to modulate the phosphorylation as well as modulate the growth of colorectal. We've had some positive work. We've been working in a KRAS mutant in vivo model, not colorectal, a different cancer type with one of our collaborators. We're having positive impact on significant growth on the tumors in this particular KRAS-driven model. And now we're going to take a step back and start trying to bring this back to beta-catenin and begin to understand what measures we should be looking at and how to begin to subset some of these patients and some of these other indications. So this is just a summary of what I tried to share with you today. You know, coming from biotech, I've got a polished 30-second pitch. I've got a polished 1 to 2 hour pitch, and this was probably my first ever 10-minute pitch. But I hope I transferred some of the information and challenges and progress that a company such as ourselves, where we're trying to go from this cutting edge publication work to a path forward so that many of the clinicians in here actually have tools to wield in the future. So thank you for your time.